Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com.
Hello, hello, women of strength. We are so excited to be sharing an H-back after two C-section story. And if you don't know yet what HBAC means, that's home birth after cesarean. And then HBA2C is home birth after two cesareans. I feel like that's kind of, it's kind of funny. It's never really a term I used because I wasn't at the hospital and I wasn't at home. But I also kind of feel like I sort of had an HBAC. It was at the birth center. Maybe that's a term, birth center birth after two cesareans. I don't know. But obviously, VBAC after two cesarean is near and dear to my own heart. And today we have our friend Macy from California sharing her HBAC story. And just before we started recording, we were talking about how, you know, one of her messages is that she wants to get is just, you can do this, right, Macy? You're just like, you can. People can do this.
For sure.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I'm excited to hear your story. And then I wanted to also just kind of talk a little bit at the end about some evidence on VBAC after two C-section. So if you're wondering more about VBAC after two C-section, make sure you stick to the very, very end, even after the story, because we'll talk a little bit about that. We do have a review of the week, and this is from Jenna, and it's actually on our How to VBAC Ultimate Prep VBAC course. And she says, I just started, but I've already learned so much. After two C-sections and one where my doctor made me think it was very risky, I was terrified to try again. With this course, not only have I learned the truth about VBAC, but I am excited to attempt mine in August. So that's coming up. So excited for Jenna. Thank you so much for the review and the support, of course, of taking the course. I'm so excited that you're getting educated, and definitely keep us posted.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
Okay, cute Macy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'd love to turn the time over to you and share whatever message you feel is important for our beautiful Women of Strength listeners.
Okay. Well, like with all VBACs, my story begins, of course, with my first pregnancy. So my first pregnancy was, I was pretty healthy. I didn't love being pregnant, but I was excited that we were starting our family. And I got to like 30, I can't remember, 34 weeks, maybe 35-ish. And baby was still breech. They offered me like the ECV procedure, but they told me I would have to do it around 37, 38 weeks. And I was worried that, you know, with it being so early before my due date, that she would turn again. And I didn't really, I was scared. They got me scared. You know, they don't really present the ECVs like something that's really should have, that should work. And my midwife was like, oh, my midwife with my third pregnancy was like, I wish you would have done it. Mm-hmm. But they kind of talked me out of it. So I decided not to do it. Come, you know, 40 weeks, she was still not flipped. But I wasn't in labor. So another thing is I wish I kind of would have just like waited to see, because, you know, maybe she would have flipped in labor.
And sometimes they do. I actually just recently had a client last year in 2023 that did have that, and she was scheduled for her version, and then she went into spontaneous labor. So she actually went in pretty early because she was like, oh my gosh, like my baby's breech. I was scheduled the next day for a version, and they were like, baby's head down. So it definitely happens.
Yeah, well, with my third one, like she was sunny side up, like she was posterior, but like I could feel her like turning and getting into position. But anyway, I'll get there. So I had my C-section scheduled. My daughter Elena was born 10 days before Christmas in 2018. So she's 5 now. She was perfect. She was 6 pounds, 13 ounces. I was not great. So after my surgery, I came out, I was in the PACU, and my blood pressure was dropping crazy low, and my heart rate was spiking super high, and I was like ghost white, and they're like, we don't know what's going on. Long, long, long story short, I was having crazy internal bleeding.
I was going to say, were you hemorrhaging? Because that sounds like hemorrhaging.
I was hemorrhaging. I was bleeding internally, but it was nothing like it was from having a surgery. It was not anything to do with baby or birth. It was the surgery. So what we discovered is they had accidentally like nicked an ab muscle and it was bleeding. So 24 hours after my daughter was born, I had to go back in for an exploratory surgery, and I was put under anesthesia completely again. So they, you know, had to cut back open my layers and kind of like start over. Thankfully, they didn't have to cut into my uterus again, but they did open me back up and, you know, stop the bleeding, cauterize it. And I mean, my recovery was just like
not
terrible.
Yeah.
Because I mean, thankfully I only had the one baby. So it was just her, and my husband is amazing. Like I could not ask for a better partner, but it was just hard. It was hard to, you know, accept that, to grieve the birth that I had dreamed of my whole life. But it never occurred to me that like I couldn't have a VBAC. My mom had a C-section, and my three subsequent siblings were all VBAC. So when someone said to me like, oh, well, I finally, you know, like 12 weeks, I recovered, I was back at the gym, and, you know, someone from the gym was like, oh, so you have to have all your babies as C-sections now. And I was like, wait, that's a thing still? Like, we're still doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I'm going to have a VBAC. And I just never even thought about it. So I immediately was like, oh, so this is going to be a thing. So that's when I found you guys, and I started listening even before I was even pregnant with my second one. But when I did get pregnant 3 years later with baby number two, I probably binge listened to every single episode. I was like, I'm doing this. I switched providers just because I just didn't have a great experience, right? So I was like, I didn't like my postpartum care. I didn't care for my pediatrician. So I just switched everything. But because I was with a new provider, I had a really difficult time locating my like surgical notes. And so my new providers wanted to know if my first C-section was done with the single or double layer closure.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because of course, like if it's single, it's going to increase my risk for rupture. And I at this point was already like, the risk of rupture is so low. Like I am not worried about it. Like breech baby is a great candidate for VBAC.
And the evidence on that is really not solid on which one really is best. I mean, there are some that show double maybe better, but that doesn't necessarily mean that your rupture rate skyrockets because you have a single layer. So they're focusing on something that didn't have a ton of evidence.
Right. And that was like, I was like, there's just not enough research to justify all of these C-sections. But because, you know, they didn't understand what had gone wrong and why I had to have a second surgery, even though I told them a million times, it wasn't like anything to do with my uterus. Like it wasn't a me problem. It was a doctor problem. They were just like, you know, we just don't feel comfortable with Tolac. And, you know, they always call, it's always Tolac. It's never just a VBAC.
I know.
But, you know, they didn't want to do anything. They didn't want to offer ultrasounds. They didn't want to, they just were not willing to take a chance, even though it was a really good chance.
Yeah.
Basically they were like, the only way you're going to have the second baby VBAC is if like you come to the hospital and you're in labor and it's time to push. And I mean, that's kind of scary to someone who doesn't know. I mean, now that I've done it, I'm like, that's what I should have done. And now that's what I tell all my friends. I'm like, you don't go to the doctor until your contractions are 2 minutes apart. Because they try to scare so many women out of their VBAC. So,
yeah.
So I just didn't really stand up for myself. And I kind of just agreed, like, okay, I guess. I told myself, like, if I go into labor before my scheduled C-section at 39 weeks, then like that's the way God wants it, and then I will have my VBAC. But obviously that never happened. I mean, 39 weeks is pretty early now, knowing, especially when due dates are just guess dates.
Very important note that you just gave there.
So I, you know, I had my baby at 39 weeks. She was perfect too. My recovery was, she was another 6 pounds, 15 ounces. So they were like the same, almost the same size. So that was Reagan. Recovery was a lot better, but still, you know, I also had a 3-year-old at home. So going from 1 to 2 was pretty good for me. Like I have a big family, and that was great. But it was still not the empowering birth that I wanted. I don't want to say I didn't feel empowered, because C-section it's badass. It's hard. It's not the easy way out ever. There's no easy way out of birth. So I do want to preface that and say, like, if that's what ends up happening and you only have 2 kids and you only have 2 C-sections, that's okay too. But I knew we weren't done having kids. And so I wanted the birth I wanted. I did not plan to get pregnant with such a short turnaround time. So I was almost 8 months postpartum when we found out we were pregnant again. And we were a little surprised. I mean, we're grown adults. Shouldn't be that surprising. But
but still, it can be a little alarming when you weren't mentally preparing for that.
I had just finished breastfeeding. Like, I was just like starting to track, you know, all these things. So I was like, oh no. So that was kind of when my work really started for me, because I was like, okay, we're doing this again, and I'm going to do this the way I want. Like, this is going to be how I want it to go. This is my story, and this is going to be an essential component of who I am as a woman and as a mother going forward for the rest of my life. And I need this to go the way I want it to go. I wanted it to go how God wanted it to go, of course, but I was like, I'm going to take more control. So then,
can I add something to that? Sorry to interrupt, but there are so many times that I hear people, well, it's not even that I hear, it's like I read on social media, people getting after moms and parents that are like, I want this birth. This is what I want. This is what I feel I need. Or, you know, kind of what you're saying, like, I want it to go a certain way. And they're like, why do you have to focus on what you want? It's not what you want. It's what's best for the baby, you know, and they're just like railing on these people. And I just want to stop and say, what you said is okay. I kind of feel like maybe a little passionate about that too, because so many people were naysayers to me. Like, it does not matter what you want. It's what's best for the baby. And it's like, well, guess what? That's also maybe what's best for my baby.
Right.
Like, what I'm wanting. And it's okay to say, women of strength, I want this birth. Mm-hmm. This is what I want. And you deserve that. You deserve to go after what you want, right?
It's hard. And being a mom is really hard. And
yes,
if you can start out in a way that you feel empowered, it's life-changing. It really is.
It is. So sorry for interrupting, but I just wanted to like give a little tidbit of like, it's okay for people to want what they want. Like, I wanted a white vehicle. I was going to find a white vehicle. Like, it's okay to get what you want and to put forth energy and to say that out loud. I want this VBAC. Like, I'm going to do this the way I want it.
You spend almost 10 months really thinking about this and praying about it. Whereas like you talk to, I mean, it wasn't as important to anyone else in my life except for me. And that was okay. Like, especially the doctors and the providers, I'm just another person to them. And yes, there are some really great providers out there and they do care, but they're at their job. They're doing their job. Well, my job is to be a mother. That's my job. And so doing that, what serves me well, it was birthing my baby the way
having a VBAC.
So I really hit the ground running. There were a few girls in my town who had recently had home births. They weren't VBACs, but they were home births. And so I reached out to them. Shout out to my girl Megan and Emily. Like, they were so helpful because they were like real people. I reached out to you guys and I just wanted to know, like, hey, what is the research on really close pregnancies? Because I wasn't going to hit the 18 months.
18 months. Like, your babies were going to be 17 months apart, right?
17 months. And so that was even annoying too, because I was like, I'm right there. Like, come on. And you guys were like, go join the Facebook community group. And I was so glad that I did, because I just was finding like story after story after post, like not only were so many women having VBACs after 2+ C-sections, but they were close together. Like, some of them were like, mine were 12 months apart. And I was like, oh, I'm good to go then. So it was so nice having that community. I even like was able to join the community within a community of everyone who was due around the same time as me. So when it got close, we had like a group message and everyone was like, is it happening today? Is it happening today? You know, like, it was so nice to not be alone in that. But I also had to find a midwife because I knew my providers were not going to be supportive of VBAC after 2. And I actually had a hard time finding a midwife, which was also annoying because you know, I was met with some midwives who were just really going to stick to that 18 months. And then I happened to just find a woman who was like, I've never done this before. You were my first VBAC after two. But she was a midwife who was very, like, very knowledgeable, done lots of home births, done VBACs, but not two after two.
Two after two, yeah.
And so she was like, if we don't start accepting these patients, like, how are we ever going to change the status quo? And how are we ever going to make a change?
Boom.
Like, right. Like,
it's so true, though.
I was like, okay, statistic me, please. Like, I would love to be like a statistic for the positive. The only thing is, like, I was like, well, I can't be one for a hospital birth, but it's fine. So,
That's okay.
So I found Sarah. You know, I started my visits with her. I had to travel an hour to my visits, which it wasn't the worst thing ever. You know, it was always, I always made
that's a commitment, though. That's a commitment.
Towards the end, she came to me a lot more, which is so nice. So nice. And then we did a couple, really like, nice phone calls. But we also, like, texted all the time and would FaceTime. And it was just so personal. I also received co-care with my regular, another third local provider. And I did that because my midwife wanted to have me get ultrasounds to check on my uterus. We wanted to check for previa, and we wanted to check for, what's the other one? I'm blanking.
Accreta?
Yes. So she wanted to just be aware of
placental issues and make sure placenta is out of the way and all is doing okay. And
not going to, you know, give
you're
me
actually enough clear to have a VBAC.
Yeah.
Which so is very responsible of her.
Yeah. So I just, you know, kind of just receive my co-care. I would go in there with, I don't know, I almost just like a chip on my shoulder because I was like, I don't really need you guys, kind of. I didn't leave those appointments feeling like I wanted to cry like I did with my second pregnancy, because I knew that I had something better planned. And so it wasn't as upsetting, but they were pretty rough on me. I had expressed my interest in a VBAC after two, and I, you know, you have to see the series of providers within the office. And I had only one who was, and he's a little bit younger, which was interesting, but he was the only one who was like, yeah, you know what? I really support this and the birth that you want to have. I'm going to give you a referral to UC San Francisco. And when we get to the end, like, I want you to start care there and, like, plan to have your birth there. And he was the only one who was like, I would support the birth you want to have. Everyone else was pretty awful. They had told me, you know, if you toe-lack and your uterus ruptures, you will die and your baby will die. And I was like, I will never forget getting in my car and texting my midwife and being like, can you believe that he just said this to me? And I was just like, are you God? Like, do you know? How can you say that? How could you say that to someone? Like, you will die. Because that's not at all. So that was just, it was interesting. But I knew, like I said, I knew in the back of my mind, I had a backup plan. So it was just eye-opening for me more than anything. It wasn't upsetting anywhere.
But someone that doesn't necessarily know the evidence of that, it can be terrifying.
Yeah. Yes, totally. And you know what? It's frustrating because a lot of people just don't, they just trust their providers. And I'm a very like skeptical person. I'm very conspiratorial. So I'm always like researching things and looking into things. But people who are not prone to that, they're just going to trust what the doctor says because they went to school and they're smarter than them. And it's so unfortunate that that is it's causing a high C-section rate, you know, for no reason. So that was a bummer. But anyway, throughout the rest of my pregnancy, I just did all the things. I did my VBAC link course. I loved it. It was great to have that. I did a Lamaze class, which was really fun. It was funny because we were like the only parents in there with other kids. One other lady was a VBAC, but the rest were all first-time parents. They're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, this is new for me. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. So again, shout out Modesto Birth and Beyond. They are fantastic. They have a great set of doulas. And they, you know, now I'm like on a friendly basis with them. And it just, they're great to have. And they were really supportive of my whole journey. Let's see what else. I did hypnobirthing class. I read Ina May's Guide to Childbirth. I mean, I walked and I stayed in shape and I kept doing CrossFit. I've done CrossFit for all three of my pregnancies. So I just kept on. I ate healthy, drank lots of water. I just did all the things. But I knew that when it came down to it, like my mind was going to either make or break me. So I, you know, fast forward to 41 weeks and I was getting very, very anxious.
Were you getting anxious because you're just ready to have a baby type thing? Or were people giving you kind of some grief that you were over 40 weeks?
No. Okay. So by the time I was like 41 weeks, the grief and the doubt and like all the naysayers that I got, they were kind of gone. Everyone was, most of the people in my life were like supportive. I always got that question, like, what if, you know, what if this happens?
Right.
I'm planning a birth at home, right? Like, what if I live 5 minutes from the hospital? So I'm not too worried about it.
Right.
So it was more anxious of like, I am ready to meet this baby. I was like the biggest I've ever been, like third baby, like only 17 months apart. Like my belly was huge. It was hot. I was swelling. So I was ready to be done. But I also had never labored before. So I had no clue if, you know, what my body was going to do. Was I just going to go into spontaneous labor at 40 weeks, at 39? Yeah, I had no idea. So every day that passes, I'm sure you remember too, like every day, like a whole week where you're like, oh, where you wake up in the morning and I would just cry. Like, I can't believe I'm still pregnant.
I remember going to bed and I was like, tonight could be the night. And then I'd wake up and I was like, it wasn't the night. And then that night I'm like, maybe tonight, you know, and then it just kept happening.
Oh, so annoying. And I just had so much prodromal labor. Like I felt contractions and they would like, I could time them.
Extra hard.
And I was like, oh, they're like 20 minutes apart. They're for sure going to get closer. And then I would fall asleep and wake up and I would be like, oh, okay, here we go again. But I did, so let's see, on a Monday, I did acupuncture.
Okay.
And then on a Wednesday morning, I was 41 weeks, and I went and got a massage, and I got some acupressure. And you never know if these are the things that really, like, get things going, but sometimes they do. You never know. So I got acupressure massage and she gave me some moxibustion. And so I did that, like, you know, that you light it and do it around your face. My mom was like, this is so hokey. I'm like, well, if it works, who cares? I was trying everything, but I didn't want to be induced and I hadn't had my membrane sweep yet. That was going to be the first intervention that my midwife and I agreed because she was like, you know, you can't legally in California go past 42 weeks and have a home birth. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I got one week and this baby will be here. But that Wednesday morning I went and got my massage. And then by like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was like, okay, things are starting to pick up. So yeah, I started having pretty intense contractions. I was like I could still talk. I was still taking care of my little girls, but I was starting to feel really uncomfortable. And my mom had gone home and she came back. And then my husband gets off work at 3:30 and it was like 2:30. And I was feeding my youngest one a snack. And he was like, do you want me to come home early? And I was like, no, I can totally make it till you get home. And then I was like, I had a contraction where I kind of like leaned over my kitchen counter I was like, okay, maybe just come home now. So he came home. And I just didn't feel, I was starting to feel like irritated by my kids. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just want to go in my room and like watch a show on my laptop. Like, I just want to be like alone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't necessarily like want them to leave yet, but I wanted to be like alone and I wanted to know they were taken care of. So he came home and he was taking care of them and he was like, do you think this is it? And let's call my mom. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I think it's happening and I think it's gonna be soon. But again, I just didn't know how long I was gonna labor. I didn't have no history. But she came and my mother-in-law came and picked up my little two daughters, and that was kind of sad, like watching them leave, knowing like the next time I saw them, they're gonna be a different family. A better family, but a different family.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just labored at home. It was so nice not having to go anywhere. You know, I took a shower and I had some snacks. I wasn't super hungry, but I definitely started like drinking my electrolytes and, you know, started
smart
to be hydrated. And I was like, I'm about to run a marathon. So we just I need to gear up.
Prepare for it.
I didn't nap. I've never been a great napper, but I laid around and watched some shows, and then I didn't text my midwife right away because I had been bugging her so much with all my prodromal labor mm-hmm. that she was like, I'm not going to text her until it's like really happening. But by like 6 or 7 p.m. I texted her and was like, just so you know, my contractions are about 10 minutes apart. And then as they got closer, she was like, okay, I'm going to come now. So once the sun started setting and, you know, it was getting a little bit more intense, you know, we set up my birth space at home. I set up my pool. Well, I didn't. My husband set up the pool and we laid out all the sheets on the couch and, you know, hung my birth affirmations. Actually, they had been hanging. All my birth affirmations had been hanging for a couple weeks. So I was starting to already have them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we turned on the twinkle lights and I started listening to my the Christian hypnobirthing app, which was fantastic. And I just had like such a peaceful labor. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. It was great. Like, my mom came in and then my sister-in-law came over and then my other sister-in-law came over and they just talked around me. Like, I could hear them, but I was just in my space, and I labored and my water never broke for a very long time. I got in the pool at one point and then I got back out because my husband was like, I think that being in the pool is slowing down your contractions a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want you to get out and walk. And then I got out and started walking up and down the hall. And then I got really sick with a contraction. And I was laboring. I happened to already be laboring like backwards on the toilet. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to throw up. So I like jumped back. I could throw up. And then my midwife was like, okay, well, you're in transition now. You've got to be. I hadn't had any checks at all this whole time either too. So I had no clue like what I was even dilated at. I was just completely trying to like trust my body and to just know that when it was time, it would be time. And it really was like my body just did what it knew to do. And I felt, like I said earlier, I felt her like move into position. Mm-hmm. I got back in the water and I I felt so relaxed in the water. Like, I was like drifting off in between contractions.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was like, it was so calm. And I was just like I just kept telling myself, like, breathe her down with every contraction. And just all the things I had been practicing, I was finally able to put into use. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. And then I got like, I had a couple like urges where I was like, I feel like I can start pushing soon. And so I was like, maybe do you want to like check me now? And as soon as she stuck her finger, I was like, oh no, it's time. Like, it's no, get your finger out. Like, it's time. We like, she's coming. And so she was like, yeah, she's ready. She's right there, but your waters haven't broken yet. And so I was like, oh, that's so okay. So I was like, can I break them myself? And she was like, yeah. So I like reached in and I like kind of gave it a little like pinch twist. And I just like in the water.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool.
No water. And I felt like the padding around her head. And then I felt it. Then I just like felt her head. I like felt her hair.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I started pushing when it was time to push, and I pushed for 17 minutes. It was perfect. Like I said, I felt her move in position, and she came out and she was 9 pounds, 12 ounces. So she was 3 pounds.
I was going to say 6'15", you said, right? Was your second and close to your first?
3 pounds heavier than my other two. She came out. She did perfect. Her heart rate was great the whole time. She came out mad, screaming mad. She was so cozy in there. She did not want to come out. She came out, but hearing her like cry within 20 seconds was so just reassuring. Like she was safe. You know, I didn't need anybody. I just needed to trust my body and to trust the Lord. And it was, my midwife was like, that was one of the most perfect births I've ever attended. And she was just like beaming with joy. And she's so excited for me. And she was just so happy because she was like, I've never done this after two. And she's like, you changed everything I thought I knew about home birth, about after two C-sections. So she even now has another client, which is great, who's a VBAC after 2C. I'm like, I cannot wait for this podcast to come out so I can share it with my midwife and she can share it with her new client, and hopefully they have a really great birth too. But all in all, like, it was just everything I dreamed of, and I was so thankful. And I just remember laying there with her on my chest, and I was watching the video last night, like trying to get in the mindset and remind myself and get there, and I said on the video, I could hear myself, well, I'm so freaking proud of myself.
You should be.
I was just like beaming with joy. I was like, that was so hard, but so worth it. So it was a great experience. And I could not be more happy with her birth. And she's a great baby. She's so happy. She was a little hard at first for 10 weeks, which was different for me. But after that, like 10 week hump, she really good baby, and she's just, her name is Lucille. Call her Lucy, which means light, and it is very just, she is the light of our life. She's the best, and I can't believe we even had a family without her for a minute there.
Yeah, but
it's my story.
Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful, it's so peaceful. It sounds like one of those births where you really do, like, you close your eyes and you just envision birth and how peaceful and beautiful and calm it really can be. And it's like, so it, to me, it's like that you just described the birth that you physically did with one that I would imagine.
Yes. You know? It's how it felt. My sister-in-laws and my other girlfriend who was there taking pictures, they were just like, that was so, like, you, they just kept saying like, you did so good. And I was just like, I don't know what that means. But they were just so, everyone was just, was proud of like how it all went. Yeah. And I think that's so, it is super revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And I hope my story touches other people's life.
Oh, it totally will. And I'm so happy that you found your midwife and that your midwife was willing to take you on, because a lot of the times providers can be nervous if they have never done it before,
you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. So I'm just so glad that she was willing. And then, you know, and that's one of the things that it gets me sometimes is with the so many people who just are not, we have to like respect them and what they're comfortable with. But really, the evidence does show that VBAC after two cesarean is reasonable. And the overall risk and rate of rupture is approximately like 1.4%. So, you know, it's still very low. still very, very low. I mean, ACOG themselves, the American Gynecologists of Obstetricians, right? Like, they suggest it. They say it's a complete reasonable option. And so for so many people to be cut off after one, it's heartbreaking because there are so many people that could have a vaginal birth, you know, all over the world that aren't given the option. And we have a high cesarean rate and we have so many, I mean, there are so many people, like, just actually weirdly enough, the other day at the gym, a man who is the darndest cutest thing ever, his name's Robin, and he'll always say hi to me and check in on me and how I'm doing, and he knows that I cycle, you know. And one of the things he asked the other day, he said, how's that doula thing coming? And I said, it's really great. And he said, you know what, I never asked you, what made you want to become a doula? And I just told him my story, and he said, oh wait, so you had two C-sections? And his eyes were like wide. And I said, yeah. And he said, but you said you have three kids. And I said, yeah. He goes, but you only had two. And I said, yeah. I said, with my first two girls. And he was like, wait. And like, he literally was stumped there for a minute. Okay. Yeah, and I was like,
no.
Yeah. And he said, wait, so you had a, this is what he said, you had a normal birth after two C-sections? I said, yes. I said, Robin, I had a vaginal birth after two cesareans. And he looked at me like, because I said the word vaginal. And I said, that's what it is. And yes, he said, I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, and people just don't know that. And then there's still so many providers all over the world that still aren't supporting it. And so in the ACOG practice bulletin, it says that VBA2C, vaginal birth after two cesarean, is reasonable to consider, or it is reasonable to consider women with two previous low transverse cesarean deliveries to be candidates for TOLAC. Now, we mentioned that word earlier, TOLAC, trial of labor after cesarean. A lot of providers use that. It is a medical term. We call it VBAC. They call it TOLAC. It's not a VBAC to them until the baby has passed through the vagina. And then it says that, so they're candidates for TOLAC, and to counsel them based on the combination of other factors that affect their probability of achieving a VBAC. Now, just a couple of things to share before we drop off on this episode. If you've had a cesarean before or two cesareans, okay, not necessarily a reason for you to have a third. If you have gestational diabetes, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't be back either. So I'm trying to talk up on these other factors, right? Mm-hmm. If we have preeclampsia, that doesn't always necessarily mean that we have to just schedule a cesarean. I mean, we've shared stories in the past. We've even had babies with things like medical conditions that still, even their provider said, just because your baby has this doesn't mean you can't have a VBAC. So that doesn't always necessarily mean you can't either. And there's, or if you have a big baby, here we are, 9-pound baby, right? A nice squishy little baby. Big baby, it doesn't mean you can't either. Small, a diagnosis of a small pelvis shouldn't consider, like, these factors really are more extreme, I feel like. And so if your provider's kind of giving you some of these, oh, well, you could have a VBAC after two cesarean, but because your baby didn't come down the last two times, it's just probably not going to happen, right? Like that, shush. Macy's right here, you can't see it. She rolls her eyes with me like, ah, it's so frustrating.
The baby's going to come out. It has to come out.
Baby's going to come out. Believe in yourself. Do the research. We do have a VBAC after two cesarean blog. We'll make sure to link it here. And then kind of like spinning back to what you said, how you're like, let me be a statistic. Let me be your statistic to your midwife. You know, VBAC after three cesarean, right? Yeah. Like, we don't have a lot of stats on VBAC after three cesarean. And I think a lot of it is because we're not doing them. We're not allowing them. Absolutely. Yet we have so many VBAC after three cesarean moms in our community that share, or on our podcast, that shows that it still is possible. So I feel like there needs to be more risk assessed there, and studies need to be done there. And so know that even if you've had three cesareans, that still doesn't mean you're eliminated from the chance to go for what you want, fight for what you want, and have that experience that not only that you want, but that you deserve.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I cannot wait for this to be published, for you to send this on to your midwife so
me
she
too.
Can send it on to the next woman of strength.
Thank you so much for having me. I've loved being here and talking with you. And I just hope that there are so many lives changed and touched from my story.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.